Hey guys, Bear Grylls here, just to say, super excited for Charles Thorpe's podcast coming soon. You guys are going to love this. What a great guy he is and so many great stories. So enjoy these and remember, above all, never give up.
Now, I personally believe that there's nothing better than a great adventure, whether it's to another country or into the backyard. It can have an amazing ability to change not just the way that we see the world, but also the way that we see ourselves. That is exactly what you're going to hear about from our incredible guests. On Great Adventures, I'm going to be hanging out with actors, athletes, thought leaders, and of course explorers, some old friends and some new, to discuss how being adventurous benefited their lives. My name is Charles Thorpe. For over a decade, I've been chasing down epic stories professionally for magazines and television shows, and now I'm bringing those conversations here. In the past few years, Michael Kelly's work has taken him to Everest, Columbia, and inside of the White House. Best known as Doug Stamper on House of Cards, I'm looking forward to the next chapter of his career on Amazon's Jack Ryan. We had a great conversation, which is coming to you right now. Check it out. Michael Kelly, thanks so much for coming on, man.
Thank you for having me. It's good to see you, man.
I know that you were just down in D.C. We overlapped a little bit, but I wasn't able to connect with you. You were down there for the correspondence dinner, the White House correspondence events that were going on around during that. And I was there during the Nelson Mandela 100 years. What has it been like sort of diving into the culture of D.C., you know, through your show House of Cards?
It's crazy because I remember the first time that we all went. It was right after the show had premiered, and not to, you know, toot my own horn or whatever, there's really not a bigger show. Maybe Veep is on the same. I've never been with any of my friends from Veep, so I don't know. But I know that first time we went, and it was Bo Willimon and Robin, Constance, Kate, Corey, myself, maybe a couple others. That basically that group of people, and we went out after, and like we had been invited to every party in town, and we just sort of hopped all these different things. And I remember Corey turning to me and he was like, "Holy shit, dude, I feel like we're the Beatles." Like,
absolutely.
It was madness. And I've never been back with the whole group. I've been back with Constance. I've been back with other people. But as that whole group together, like during the madness of the launch of that show and what it was at the time. But I go back and it's still crazy. Like, I walk the streets there and it's like,
is it just Stamper all day long?
It's nuts because everybody's like, "Oh, I know a guy just like you." And I know, you know, like, and, you know, and they always are like, you know, I maybe just shy of killing somebody. But, you know, I know a guy who's just
no
like
one's confessed
that.
Murder to you just yet.
Exactly. But they all know somebody. Like, they're just like, and everybody needs one. And everybody's like, "I'm a chief of staff and such, can I get a picture?" Wow, I try to be like you, and I'm like, yeah.
And they want the super crazy. Serious pose, obviously.
Yeah. Well, I always offer that. I'm like, "Well, you want to do one smiling and one serious?" And like, yeah. So, yeah, it's a lot of fun. And I think the coolest part is the fact that I've been able to use that to actually get on the Hill and meet with people about senior citizens in this country and the problem with that. So, not the problem of senior citizens, but how to care for them.
Yeah, absolutely.
And so, you know, to use that voice in a positive way. And it's great because most of the meetings that I go into, people, you know, they sit down and they listen because, you know, and I go with the women from NVRA, and I met with a Georgia congressman, and I'm from Georgia, and I figured this is, you know, going to be like the rest of the day where it's like, "Oh my God, hey, how you doing? Can we get a picture? And what do you want to talk about? And what are you here for?" And this guy was like, "Hi, how you doing? So what's going on, guys? What are we talking about here?" And I was like, sat to this very uncomfortable meeting, really having to sell this issue. Mm-hmm. And at the end, we walk out, and the girl from NVRA turns to me, and she was like, "I'm so glad that you got to witness that, because that's what our meetings are normally like. That's how important your presence is here."
Yeah.
Because all the other meetings, people were listening and taking notes. And this guy was just like, what is this 15 minutes about? You know, because they take these meetings all day, and of course, you know, a lot of them they're bored by everyone having their issues.
Absolutely. And again, like, you've been able to sort of really dive into that culture. I mean, I think when we talked earlier, and you mentioned first getting down there and setting up shop, and you used to road trip down there, right, for the show?
Yeah,
you drive down there.
Yeah. A lot of my friends. Well, a lot of them came in from LA, but from those of us from New York, most everybody took the train. But I used that time, the drive. It's like, you know, it was three hours, 15 minutes to my apartment in Baltimore, and it was like 2:40 to stage, 2:45.
Mm-hmm.
So I would just listen to my lines and kind of just on the way there fall into the Doug Stamper mindset.
Right.
You know, I didn't live in it, but you know what I mean? Just sort of helped me ease into it. And then on the way home, I'd listen to about halfway, and I'd schedule it where I could listen to the baseball game for the second half. My drive.
That's awesome. Yeah. Were you sort of like halfway into Stamper when you'd stop on some roadside and you find yourself being a little colder to like the clerk
or something like that? It's funny because you know, when you, a lot of times I just drive in silence. And like I said, I'll listen to my lines, and you do, you sort of get into that, you know, and then you get out, like you said, and you gas up or whatever, and you find yourself not being as polite as you normally are, because I'm a pretty easygoing cat.
Absolutely.
You know,
for people who don't know, yeah, you're one of the easiest going guys.
So, yeah. Stamper is a completely different person from me. So, yeah, you do catch yourself from time to time, especially also, like, in Baltimore, I kept that very minimalist apartment. Everything was very zen and just minimal, similar to the way that he lived on
really?
The show. And like I said, I didn't live in it. I would still go to the pub and I'd have fun, but some days you'd be home, you know, you have an off day, and maybe you go for a run on the water there in Baltimore, and then you come back and you sit around your house all day and study and just going over your work, and you walk out of the house, go to Whole Foods or something, and you're just like, wow, I need to get out of this headspace, you know?
Yeah.
Did you just fall into it.
Did you develop any favorite, because I was just down in D.C. again visiting our friends at Nat Geo, who you did the long road home with. Any recommendations for people who hit D.C.?
Well, I mean, D.C., yeah. I mean, we shot 90-something percent of that show in Baltimore.
Yeah.
But D.C., going there, there's that famous old hot dog place that Kevin Spacey and I did a whole one day for publicity for the show. We just literally went around in a limousine as the president and chief of staff with the things in the car.
Oh,
and
wow.
Cars following us. And
that's crazy.
And it was, you know, and we'd pull up to a light, and Kevin would put the window down, and people were like, oh my God. They're like, we thought we were going to, and this was during Trump's reign. They're like, we thought we were going to see the other president. It's so good to see you.
That's hilarious.
Obviously after Trump was elected, before all the madness that happened
with
our show. But we went to this famous hot dog place, and for the life of me, I'm blanking on the name.
We'll put it in the show notes or something like that. I'll text you later.
And Ebbets Bar and Grill is obviously one of the,
of course,
just my favorite spots to go in D.C.
That's awesome. And during that road trip, do you develop any favorite spots between New York and Baltimore?
No, man, that was 95
cold. Sometimes, I mean, there is like there's, you know, the romance of the road trip, and then sometimes you hit a piece of road, you're like, what do people like about road trips, man?
For me, there's that one when you go over the, it's just shy of Joppa coming from the north, and it's just this beautiful stretch of water, and just beautiful. Now there was a quarry on one side, but it was pretty. But most of it, straight shot. 95, I'd fuel up before I left, and I'd try to make it the whole way without
pretty barren,
having to stop. Yeah.
Pretty sparse. You know, during the show, you met the president. I mean, tell me a little about going into the White House. I mean, there's not a lot of people who are going to get into the White House in the capacity that you did.
Yeah. The access that I had was mind-blowing, and I actually, when I met President Obama, we were at the, it was a Correspondents' Dinner weekend, and they hold this little small reception beforehand where the president comes in and greets some people, and I remember I was out the night before at one of the parties, and it wasn't his chief of staff, it was this young guy, what was it, oh man, terrible. Anyways, he's like, well, what was it like the first time you met President Obama? I was like, I've never met him. And he was like, are you kidding me? Dude, you got to meet him. And I was like, I would love to meet him. I love President Obama. And he's like, here's my card. Email me you and your wife's social security number, and I'll set it up for tomorrow night. I email him social security numbers. He set it up. We showed up. And you just hang out and you wait. And he stands there. It was him and Michelle. And I'll never forget it, man. I was... They said, Mr. President, First Lady, this is Michael Kelly and his wife, Karen Mandel. And Michelle Obama was the first one to speak. And she was like, oh, my God, we love your show. And in my head, I'm just like, oh, my God, you guys know who I am. This is crazy. And it was just, and he was like, and he turned, he's like, don't worry, Michelle. I heard he's not nearly as diabolical in real life.
Oh, man.
And we got to, you know, give a shake and a bro hug. And it was just.
Yeah,
that was a highlight, and then he ended up signing the photo to the four of us, and it was such a treat. And it's funny, we just moved, so we are in the process of taking all of the stuff that we've been. We did like a year and a half renovation, and then we did prior to that we were in a sublet for a while until we were acquiring this current house. So now we're framing everything and we're getting ready to put everything. Right now it's just a bunch of white walls.
That's got
to
be exciting though.
It is.
Yeah,
it is.
A whole new paintbrush on the on life.
Yeah.
You still a New Yorker though?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay,
Lower East Side.
Yeah, that's where I live too. And I remember I met up with you around that area a couple times. I mean, we're talking about things you take away from a show. Again, I want to just go into the recent Jack Ryan, that experience. I love that first season. John Krasinski was great. I know a military operator that was like a consultant on the show.
So many badasses.
Just surrounded by badasses around there. Did you cross paths with him?
Yeah, I did. Well, briefly, though, because we didn't have anything together. Our scenes didn't cross over. But, yeah, I mean, dude, all those guys. Like, to have real military guys on set it's invaluable. Like, you know, I'm the guy who's constantly like, is this right? Is this right?
Right.
Is this right? I want, if you're playing a guy in the CIA, or you're playing a guy in the military, you want to represent them the best you can, right? I mean, you don't want to screw up.
Of course like, not. Especially in front of their faces.
Right. You know, so I was always like any, you know, there was voluntary stuff. There was stuff you had to do. I would do anything and everything they asked because, to me, I mean, that's half the job. And it's a lot of the fun, too. I love training. I love knowing how to enter a room and, you know, clear a room with four guys, clear a room with one guy, clear a room with two guys, and all the different ways you're going to do that. Loved it.
That's awesome.
Loved it.
What kind of prep did you do before going into this? Your character, Mike November, is his name, right?
Yeah.
What's out there that we can actually talk about so far?
Well, he's the chief of station for the CIA in Caracas, Venezuela. And I think one of the most fascinating things about this season that people are going to just freak out on is, you know, we came home from filming this and realizing this was written, you know, a year prior to us probably even filming it, right? And then we come home and within a month or two, I remember all that news broke in Caracas, Venezuela, and the embassy, they were like, get out, everybody, you know, Americans, get out.
Evacuated, yeah.
And it's just insane that the parallels between our show and what is happening in real life. And John texted me and Wendell, we're on the text chain together, and he's like,
John Krasinski, yeah.
Yeah, John Krasinski is like, dude, did you see this? I was like, I'm watching it now. I can't believe it.
Wow.
So people are going to freak out, you know, and like House of Cards, I think people are going to be like, wait a minute, did they tear from the headlines, you know? And it's like, nope. We did it first.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
So what training did you do before you went into this? I know, there was a couple guys that you had, you know, doing consultant work.
Yeah, yeah, and they would take us, and you know, it was pretty much just learning how. And it's funny because in my head, I'm going, okay, was that Long Road Home or was that this?
Of course, you know, which is a similar sort of training situation.
Yeah,
obviously, completely different plot.
Completely
line,
different, but you know, these same badass guys
tactics
that are teaching you just proper ways to move and hold a gun and you know, I mean, I flew in a Black Hawk like by myself, two pilots up front, I'm in the back, you're supposed to wear like this 4-point harness, and they're like, well, we kind of need you leaning out the window.
You don't
do you
look
mind
cool enough
just putting on the waist one? And I was like, not at all, there.
Oh, dude, that's
you know,
so fun,
holding the shoulder strap and hanging out. And when they pitch that thing on an angle and the wind is rushing through because both sliders are wide open,
yeah.
And
people don't realize
wind,
I've been in an open
like
door helicopter too, and it's just the wind whips.
Yeah, yeah. And it was, and one of the guys said it the best. One of the pilots, he said, I was like, this machine is amazing. I mean, it takes like a good 20, 30 minutes to get, when they first crank it up,
right,
before you can even take off. So you're just sitting in it,
right,
and you're feeling this. And I remember him saying to me, he's like, yeah, man, the Blackhawk, he's like, looks like a school bus, but it drives like a Ferrari. And I'm like, this thing drives like a Ferrari is all I'm thinking in my head.
Yeah.
And the first time we went up, you know, from the ground to like, God knows how many, 15 stories in the air, it was like a second and a half. It felt like you're like, oh my God.
Oh my God, yeah.
And then just the way it pitches and rolls, it's such a, I don't mean rolls, does a roll, but
right,
the way it cruises.
Yeah.
You're just like, wow, it's a Ferrari, man. it's a machine. And it just is, you know, like an 8-year-old kid again, you know. And I'm like constantly saying to myself, I can't believe
this is
someone's
work,
paying me to do this, yeah, shit, to see the world and, yeah, to fly in Blackhawks, man.
That's amazing.
It's so cool.
Where'd you guys shoot that scene?
That was in Bogota. That was in, what part were we in there? It might have been outside of Bogota. No, we were in the jungle. We were in, what the hell's the name of that town? It's like a 3-hour drive from Bogota, and talk about a drive, and that was not like just,
yeah,
you know, mountainous, like, just get me,
yeah,
there alive, man,
huh?
Just get me there alive.
I love
and
it.
Get me home. It was, you know, it was a very real thing that when we all landed back in the U.S., you know, I was gone for 3 months. I lived in Bogota for 3 months, Medellin, Cartagena, and traveled all around, and I was very, all of us were very happy and relieved to get home safely, because it's, you know, Bogota's an amazing place. I'm not saying don't go there. It's an incredible, incredible city, but you have to be smart.
Absolutely.
You know, it can be a very dangerous city as well.
Yeah, there were a few things that went down when I was out there last, actually, but Colombia is one of my favorite places in the world. I love talking about it. So yeah, where did you guys, you know, you guys were base camped in Bogota,
yeah,
you guys stayed in Bogota most of the time, and then you guys also went to Cartagena and a few other spots, right?
Yeah, and here in the U.S. we shot in New York, we shot in San Diego, on a giant ship, which was also an incredible experience, getting on the base and just hanging out with all these, you know,
the real guys,
the real dudes, man, and they're telling us all about their ship, and it was all of it, just, you know, but going back to Bogota, I think, you know, we're in this beautiful little safe, you know, we stay in the Four Seasons, and but like if you wanted to go to the outdoor market thing, the flea market on the weekends, like you took an Uber there. You would never,
of course,
you can't go from town to town,
yeah,
without going through a bad part of town. So
right,
just Uber's great and safe and it was cool. But yeah, man, we seeing some of the places that I got to see again, just pinching yourself going, I mean, Cartagena's stunningly,
yeah,
beautiful.
The beaches.
Highly recommend the old city there in Cartagena.
Did the cast get into any activities, or you guys have any time off, or was it pretty much
didn't
straight
really
work?
John Krasinski is truly one of the most generous, kindest actors that I've ever worked with. And one weekend before we started in Cartagena, when we finished Bogota, as a little treat, he rented this little house for us, and which had, like, you know, all the meals served.
Oh, beautiful.
He took us out diving on a boat. And
oh,
it
nice.
Was just... He truly is, like, just one of the greatest guys in this business that I've ever worked with, and I've worked with some amazing people. But he treated us all to this beautiful weekend, and that was, like, our... Really, other than the time that I had with my family when they were there, my family came for a month right in the middle. And other than that, that was really, as a group, our only, you know...
Yeah.
Downtime, like it was a grind, man. It was
of
really
course, and I think it's great you guys got that time, because I know, you know, some people get down on those shows, or, you know, will be there filming and never get to experience one iota,
yeah,
of a country, you know. So at least you guys had that moment, and then, I mean, obviously, I can't wait for people to see the footage, because
yeah,
it's gonna be just gnarly, I'm sure. The first season was crazy, and I know it seems like they're upping the ante as they always do.
Yeah, and credit to Amazon, you know, and John's production team, like those directors, everybody, man, they just, you know, everybody was in it and was just like, we're gonna, you know, Denny Gordon spent a lot of her time in the jungle, and that was, it was hell, man. You know, like, I think I had like 5 days there in the jungle. They were there for weeks.
Yeah, that's awesome.
And that was the time when my family was there, and so I had a nice break with them, but it was hardcore, man. And, you know,
yeah,
nasty, like, you're in a jungle, for God's sake. But, and they just balls out went for it, because, you know, they want what's, it's going to look great.
Yeah.
It's going to look great. People, I think, are going to really respond to this season.
Yeah, well, you're no stranger to hardcore filming. I know we talked about Everest, and I want to talk a little bit about that experience as well.
Yeah.
We did a story for Men's Journal, which I, you know, think everybody should check out when they get a chance as well. But yeah, let's take people a little bit through that process. You played John Krakauer, who wrote the book that the movie was based on, and a tremendous cast, obviously. Josh Brolin, Jake Gyllenhaal.
Yeah.
I mean, amazing, amazing crew. I mean, tell me when you first got that role, and then how you guys prepared for filming that.
I was over the moon, because a lot of those cats that you just mentioned were already attached. So I was just like, oh my God, yeah. Like, I love Josh Brolin. I think he's a tremendous actor, and I'd heard nothing but great things. I have a friend, mutual friend, who's good friends is. And so I was just excited to go, man. And then I was like, you know, like, we're really gonna climb? Like, and they're like, yeah. And I was like, training? You know, like, I remember,
yeah,
I got there for our training week, and before we started filming, and
into Nepal?
No, this was in London. We
oh, okay.
all flew to London just to learn the gear,
oh,
you
nice.
Know, learn about harnesses and all that kind of stuff. And I was like, I remember turning to, I think it was Brolin, and I said, did they ask if you guys like had a bad back or a bad knee or anything? Like, they didn't ask me shit. Like, and they were all like, no
physicals, huh?
Nobody, you know, nobody inquired. Like, and so that when we got there, and our training was pretty minimal, you know, we really learned on the fly, like in Nepal, and then of course in the Italian Alps. But I was just like, I was blown away that they're just throwing all these guys into this thing, like, just not blind, but
right.
some pretty dark glasses.
Maybe the producers just saw you guys, like, these guys look strong.
They
could probably handle themselves.
I've seen that guy with a gun.
Yeah, exactly. Stampers out, crushing skulls. So probably getting all right.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, tell me when you first flew in and what that was like. I mean, I think you showed me a video of you guys on the plane.
Oh, that was, yeah. Yeah. When you get to, first. You go to Kathmandu and you get into Kathmandu, and then you take one of those little jumper planes up into what is considered probably top five most dangerous airports in the world, called Lukkala. And people listening, man, Google it. It is insane. It's an uphill runway. One plane can land and it goes up the hill and turns around, loads up, and then comes back down the hill. And the reason that it's angled is because it's such a... The runway is literally up in the mountains. And you land, and you have to be going uphill or else the plane would never have enough time to slow down. And the reason it's downhill is because when you take off, you literally go... And you just go off the cliff and you feel the plane drop before it picks up. And it's just like... I mean, it's an incredibly exhilarating, but really frightening at the same time. And... yeah, that video I showed you, I remember it was just like, you know, I remember turning around to Brolin and he was just like, holy shit. And we're all like, it's so cool. But
yeah.
There is that moment of, you know, the first day that we went to fly up to Lukkala to take this crazy flight. And the airport, I mean, it was comical in Kathmandu. You go there and there is a metal detector that you go through for security, but people were just walking around it, like,
yeah,
literally you could take anything
picks,
on that airplane,
you know,
you
whatever,
wanted to take,
yeah.
And it doesn't, nothing matters, it's just like, eh, whatever,
you made it out alive,
and
know.
Then we get there and we sit in this room and it wasn't raining or anything, but the winds were blowing, and so they're like, it's probably gonna be an hour or two, and then we'll go. 3 hours, 4 hours, 5 hours, 6 hours, and it's not like a regular, like there's no restaurants and there's no, you know, you're lucky to get a snack,
right?
And we sat there all day, and we actually went out to the plane and they brought us back, and then we sat there a little longer, and then I got, you know what, we're gonna do it tomorrow, and we're just like,
you guys are like on edge, you guys are, how long
totally.
Am I gonna have to just sit
and
here?
As it is, like, yeah. You have such little time, because once you land, and luckily you've got to then we're trekking,
right.
You know, you're trekking up the mountain to where we're going to film. And, you know, there's people carrying like serious heavy gear. And obviously we had Sherpas and stuff, but it was nuts.
Man. Yeah.
You know, there was no real catering or, you know, your lunch was, you know, whatever the yaks could carry up.
So right.
your lunch was seriously in a brown paper bag. And for those of you who don't know, like when you're acting on a big film like this,
usually there's some
one
sort of
the greatest thing is you get like these ridiculous lunches and dinner. It's just ridiculous. Catering is insane. Craft services is insane. So that when they hand you a paper bag that had, I'm not kidding, you would have like an apple or an orange or an hard boiled egg, like a mini Snickers bar, and two pieces of Wonder Bread with a piece of yak cheese and like one slice of a tomato on it. That was that was your lunch.
Well, I'm hungry right now, so that actually sounds pretty good.
No, dude, yak cheese is so gamey. It is the gamiest cheese that I've ever put in. I couldn't eat it.
Yeah, oh, that's great.
So we all lost a lot of weight.
Yeah, but I mean, it is, you know, you could have had those ridiculous lunches, but you walked away with an incredible life experience.
Oh, I mean, wouldn't trade it for the world. I only bring it up because it's funny.
Of course,
I gave zero shits. You know, you walk out over that bridge, that suspension bridge, that famous suspension bridge there on the trek up to base camp, and it's just like,
yeah,
when would I have ever seen this?
I
mean, maybe if one of my kids was like, one day said, Dad, can we trek to base camp? I'll be like, yeah, I'll do it with you.
Yeah.
You know, but the odds of me ever going there were probably slim to none. And to see that, to walk out over that bridge and to get to the other side and have this conversation with Guy, what's his last name? Guy he's the guy who took over Rob's adventure group, Adventure Consultants.
The
guy who took over the company. And he... I remember standing there with me and him, Roland, Jill, and a bunch of us were all hanging out, and we were taking a break and drinking some water, and he was like, so would you guys want to do it? Like, we had done some good training by then, and we were like, what? And he's like, would you want to summit? And we're like, you think we could? And he's like, yeah, there's no doubt I could get all you guys to the top and back down, barring a sickness at base camp, which is very common.
Right.
Deli belly or whatever. Yeah, I think I would definitely get to the top. And I was like, no, I don't want to.
I'm good.
I have no desire. I have children now, you know. I don't take the same life risks that I used to take.
Yeah. Did anybody have that itch to actually get up there?
Not that I know of. I don't think anyone's done it. But yeah, I mean, Brolin's a real adventure seeker, but now he's got a little one as well, so
right.
I don't know that he'd do it now, but
yeah,
who knows. You know, he did some good climbs before we went on the trip.
Awesome, man. I mean, I can only imagine. Obviously things are getting a little hairy out there right now, so
yeah.
You know, people are trying to push people to go to other mountains, other places in the area. There's something, you know, majestic about actually making it to the summit. You know, obviously I've toyed with the idea myself and what it would take, but I mean, I think you guys got as close as I'd want to go. You know, I think, you know, seeing the mountain and its majesty, I think what's going on there right now probably isn't worth what it's become.
It's so commercialized, right? I mean, it's such this, and you're right. Like, when we were doing that trek up to base camp, and the first time that you come around and you see the little plume coming off the top of it, and you're, you know, it's far away still, but you're just like, wow, I get it. I, like, part of me gets why someone's like, I want to touch the top of the world. I get it.
Mm-hmm.
But I feel like, and there's a lot of people who would probably be upset with me for saying this, but I feel like there's too many people who are going to the top to take the selfie and say they did it,
right.
As opposed to, because it's not
for
the
an
most,
own personal inner journey.
Exactly.
Yeah.
If unless you're tagging it as one of the, you want to do them all.
You want to do the seven. Yeah.
You want to do them all. Then I kind of get that. But otherwise, I'm like, it's so commercialized now, and there's so many people going up that people are dying just because it's too crowded.
Yeah.
You know, there's plenty of other things to worry about, like running out of oxygen.
Right,
but
yeah.
because there's a line, like it's Disney, like, nah, yeah. I don't think that's cool. And they have made a real effort to clean the mountain, which is great, but still the trash is just, I mean, it's, I don't know.
Yeah. you wonder, you know, sometimes things, you know, crest, and sometimes things need to get, you know, need their time away. Maybe we should just take a break for a little bit. Yeah. We can come back in a couple of years, you know, give it a break.
I'm sure after this year that's going to happen because, you know, those, I'm sure a lot of people would say they're, some of those were preventable deaths this year, you know, and that's a lot to wear on your sleeve.
Yeah, you know? Absolutely. I mean, how were you guys, how long were you guys up there?
So we were, you know, we got up to about, I don't remember exactly, I want to say like 15.5, which is just shy of base camp, which is still really freaking high.
Yeah, that's pretty high. the air's a little thin.
You know, yeah, and we were jumping from 12.5 in helicopters, so you were going from 12.5 to 15 for that one day of this just beautiful piece that's in the film. And that was tough. It was hard. The altitude was tough for me to begin with. Like, it's funny. There were people, and I'm not going to mention any names, there were smokers and people who were not in great physical shape, who were not athletic, who were completely fine with the altitude. There were others who were very fit, great climbers to begin with, who had serious issues with the altitude. For me, every night and every morning felt like Josh Brolin was pressing on my temples with his palms. It just was a headache that was... And in the day, it was fine. I got up, I got moving, you're climbing, and I'm fine. But in the morning and night, when you lay down, you're just like, oh, I just want this to go away so badly.
It can take a lot out of you.
Yeah, it really does. It just knocks you on your ass. So that's as high as we got there. But the real challenges came when we were in the Italian Alps, right up on the Swiss border there. And we were, you know, every day, Groundhog Day, you just go up there and you would just... put on all that gear and you would just climb, and they would just film you climbing.
Yeah.
And, you know,
not only are you suffering, but somebody's documenting it. Very, 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 very high D.
And you know, they'd say cut, and you would find yourself going back down, and you know, you're on a rope the whole time. I never feared for my life in any way, shape, or form, but just the mental exhaustion of climbing something and then them saying, all right, cut, reset, and you're just like,
go back to one.
I want to go higher. Yeah. I don't want to go back down.
That's the whole point of climbing, is to keep on moving up.
It seems counterintuitive. They're shoveling salt and snow into giant like airplane fans, blowing them at you. So it was ruthless.
What a crazy experience, though. Yeah. Is that would that be the craziest experience you've had professionally?
Yeah, probably.
Yeah,
I mean, Africa for that HBO series, Generation Kill, was pretty nuts.
Yeah, let's talk about that a little bit.
That was crazy too. We crossed the lower half of South Africa, started in Namibia. We filmed there. Then went to the middle to Upington, filmed there for the longest chunk, and then we finished in Mozambique all the way on the other coast, on the eastern coast, of South Africa, and then down into Swaziland and went to Cape Town, but just for fun. But seeing all those different parts of South Africa was just incredible, you know, the sand dunes in Namibia, and we all went up on the sand dunes and, you know, took our cardboard and slid down, and that was a trip where we all adventured. And I was one of the older guys at the time, and this was a good long time ago now, but most of the guys were in their 20s, and I don't even remember how old I was, but
you were young at heart.
I was much older than the rest of the guys. Me, Chance Kelly, and a few others. We were the elder statesmen on that one. And so the younger guys were always, you know, gung ho and wanting to go do adventures. And
I was dragging you along.
Let's go. I'm in, dude. Yeah. the hardest part for me, though, was staying in Namibia, and there was great surf right, you know, you're right on the water, and right out from our condos there were these was a great break, and I never got to go out. And
so you're just looking at this amazing break
every
and then
day
having
I
to go to
out.
Work.
Exactly. I'd just be like, oh man. But you know, I never saw anyone out in the water. So I was like, is it even safe? You know, but it doesn't matter. If you're surfing, you're looking at a nice wave, you're like, oh,
I don't care if there's sharks, I don't care if there's reef. Like, I want to get out there.
Yeah. So
was that so then you were then you said you were using the cardboard down in the sand in the desert.
These sand dunes
look so fun.
One of the higher sand dunes in the world, and that was amazing. And it's the finest sand you've ever seen in your life. You pick it up and you let it fall out of your hand, like it's microscopic,
barely noticeable.
Granulars of sand, to the point where they're like, do not drop a phone or a camera or anything in the sand because it will go in deep enough where you're gonna grab it,
right?
You'll get it, but when you pick it back up, like one of our friends had one of those you know, like a Sure Shot Nikon that collapses to a flat little rectangle,
mm-hmm.
and it was closed and he dropped it and he picked it up and it was ruined. It got into, like, that's how fine the sand was. It got into that circle around the lens. And
oh, that's crazy.
It was done. We're like, oh, wow, they're right. don't drop shit here.
Don't test them. Don't test them out there.
But, that was a lot of fun. And seeing the culture there was difficult for me because what you had was, I believe it was Dutch that came in there and sort of took Namibia, right? So you have, like I said, we stayed in these beautiful condos. It was off season. So we stayed in these beautiful condos and we all had our own like two-story, three-bedroom. It was ridiculous, you know.
Right.
During the season, I'm sure it cost a fortune, but it was probably really cheap for us.
That's another big advertisement for people to go off season to places. I mean, that's what I've been researching like crazy now for some stores is like, you know, just a... get it, you know, maybe 10 degrees cooler,
yeah,
and you're gonna save hundreds of dollars and live like a king,
right? And who, and really, do we know the difference? No,
yeah.
Like we would
not,
you,
really.
You know, in the evenings you're wearing a jacket, okay? It's still beautiful and hot in the day.
What's next for you? What's the next big trip for you guys? You know, are you guys getting back to DC anytime soon?
No, or? I'm not.
You're
no,
done
I,
with
well,
DC?
No, I will. Look, I want to go back. I want to. It's been difficult for me with the current administration to do the kind of work that I want to do. I don't feel like there's a lot of open hearts listening to issues about seniors right now. And it's been hard for me with the current administration to go. So I think, you know, I went there to put my finger on the pulse this last correspondence dinner, the first correspondence dinner I've gone to since Trump went into office. And I still feel like I just might need a little more time.
Couple
I just
more
feel
years.
Like it's gonna. Anything I do right now is gonna fall on deaf ears, and I could be wrong, and maybe I should just test it. But right now, I decided after I did, you know, I went straight from House of Cards into Jack Ryan, and I decided, you know what, that was a year, pretty much a year straight of work.
Yeah.
And
away from home.
Away from home. Away from my children. And my kids are young, they're 7 and 10. And so I decided I was gonna give a little time to the family and really, truly just focus on becoming a family. And it's been months and we're having the best time. You know, every son's baseball practice and my daughter's viola and his piano. And like, they're just doing so many cool, these kids are getting experience, you know, they go to public school and they're getting the coolest, she just did this ballroom dance thing at her school and it was this beautiful little, you know, incredible cultural experience from a public school, and I'm proud that my children go to public school here in the city.
Yeah, I think it's
so getting to know them again. I'm just like, this is awesome. Like I earned this time to be with my family right now, and that's not to say I won't work, but it's got to be the right job right now. I just don't want to work just to work.
It's just as important to have a home, you know?
Yeah.
And I think one of the best things about traveling, you know, I just came back from D.C. for a couple of days, and it's being back home and having my coffee and seeing my friends. And,
yeah,
really getting to connect with people again. And I'm glad you're spending the time where you need to, man.
Yeah, and we're rolling, too. You know, like, we just took the kids to Palm Springs, and then from Palm Springs, we went to Joshua Tree. And
beautiful.
I mean, it was... I'd never been there, and I was just like... oh my God, like one of those places that really does just take your breath away with how beautiful it is. And seeing my kids just jump up on those giant rocks and climb and climb and climb, and, you know, it gives you a heart attack, but at the same time, you're like, yeah, man, that's, I always thought of Palm Springs as just the cool pools and cool hotels and cool houses and the architecture, right? But literally, and it was my buddy Peter from Netflix, he let us use his house. And right from his house, you go a half a mile, and then you get on these hiking trails that you're just that have waterfalls in the middle of the desert, and there's cactus, and there's it's just and you know, the kids are seeing animals and lizards and stuff that they've never seen. Yeah. And it's right there in Palm Springs, and it's such a beautiful place right in the middle of the desert, man.
There we go.
Yeah,
check out Palm Springs, guys.
Yeah,
that's a little advertisement,
like an advertisement for Palm Springs.
There we go.
But it really was that magical.
That's awesome. Yeah. Michael, thanks so much for being on.
Thank
man.
You
really
so
appreciate
much
it.
Good to see you, brother.
Thanks for listening, guys. If you like what you heard, hit subscribe and leave a quick review on iTunes. Suggest it to a friend who could use a little travel inspiration. If you have a travel question or suggestion on someone I should chat with, just hit me up on my social channels at Charles Thorpe and at Adventure Podcast. New episodes will be dropping every Friday, so keep checking in for the next. Until then, safe travels. Conversations were recorded at Smile Radio, located in Smile to Go at the Freehand Hotel.